travel for one, please.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
When it comes to solo travel, there seems to be a lot of preconceived ideas about what is involved. Thankfully, our resident solo travel advisor, Astrid, has been on a 38-plus year fact-finding mission. I'm producer Catherine, and dear listeners, prepare to have some common solo travel myths debunked. Do myths abound around solo travel, Astrid?
Oh, definitely. For many people who have never traveled solo, there's a false belief or convention that, or wisdom or whatever you want to call it, that this type of travel is less desirable and is inferior. You know, many people, when you talk about solo travel or the idea of going somewhere solo, they immediately think, oh, dangerous, lonely, stressful. What if? What if this happens? What if that happens and I'm all by myself? It's more fun to travel with somebody else. And this is another one. Solo travelers are weirdos, and they have no one to travel with. So I call it, and I've heard it. People say, "Oh, well, it's just the Lonely Hearts Club abroad," and that's not true at all. The statistics, in fact, they show that there are more and more people are traveling solo, and they're traveling solo because they want to. And not because they have to, not because they don't have anybody else to go with them. So the goal of the podcast today is I'd like to begin to debunk these traditional, outdated, negative opinions about solo travelers. As likewise, I want to help the listeners get past the limiting thinking and to actually take a solo trip. Because a lot of times people will think about it, but they don't take that real big step to do it. So I hope some of the ideas and things I shared today will, you know, maybe help somebody decide to go solo. And I guess I need to just share breaking through those fears, because I think a lot of this is just a fear, the fear of the unknown. So one of my frequent hashtags that I use in when I developed my Astrid Solo Travel website, and when we went through the mission statement and just everything that I wanted to focus on sharing in terms of affordable luxury solo travel, one of my hashtags and slogans is "Travel for One, Please." So that's what this show is going to be about, is to focus in on some of the beliefs that I think now are outdated and really are not true.
Well, that sounds awesome. So let's get to the bottom of some of these common myths. I'm going to start with the first one here. Solo travel is only for those who are single.
Well, yes, a lot of people think that, you know, how would a married person or what, you know, that doesn't sound normal. Well, I'm going to use me as a prime example. I have been married for 38 years. I have traveled a lot with my husband. For the first 20 years of my marriage, we traveled a lot together. And we enjoyed traveling together. He enjoyed it. Some of it was for business and some of it was for pleasure and, you know, and likewise for family. Well, about 15 years ago, he started not wanting to go anywhere. He didn't like the hassle of it. He didn't want to sleep in another bed. He definitely wasn't interested in going to museums. I mean, it was just like he just was no. And I I love to travel, and I've always wanted to go to all the seven continents, and I just love to travel. So I just decided that if I want to go and see the things that I want to see, I have to figure out how to do it by myself. So that kind of started me on the whole solo travel path. And I must say that I've been doing it quite a lot consistently for the last 15 years, and I am on a roll because now I have this website, the podcast, you know, there are all kinds of things that are evolving from this. But because it is now a trend and it's more and more popular. You know, not only for people who are married, because I have a lot of friends, I'm in the baby boomer category, who say, oh, you know, just like you, my husband doesn't want to do that. But he wants to go on a golfing vacation where we just golf all the time. My friend will say, I don't want to golf. I want to shop. I want to do that. So here you have, he wants to go golfing. She wants to go shopping. And a lot of times going to the same place doesn't really satisfy exactly what each one of them does. So I'll see people now, the husband will go on a golfing trip and the wife will negotiate. She will go and do her thing on her trip. So that's much more, that happens much more now than it used to 10 or 15 years ago. Then also, you know, especially in my category, there are ladies and men who are divorcees, they're widowers, you know, they're retired, they have the money and the financial ability as well as the time to travel. And they're at the stage of their life that, you know, they didn't get to see this or go this, or go here, and they want to go. So they are going. And what you see now is there are a lot of companies that, you know, traditionally did not gear towards the solo traveler, and they're doing it. So here again, that shows you the numbers are there. People are traveling solo much more, and it's not like for the Lonely Hearts Club. Then you have got the people who travel solo who are in the age bracket of 40 to 65. Typically, those solo travelers just want to detach. They have careers, they have a lot of responsibility with educating their children, and there's just a lot of things that are pulling at them. So they realize from time to time that they just need to basically detach or go somewhere, recharge their batteries, and have some good quality, what I call me time. And you're seeing that a lot more. I mean, ladies and men are going and taking wellness vacations, or they'll just go themselves, say, to London for a week and tour the gardens, you know, if they're interested in, say, horticulture or whatever. They'll just go somewhere by themselves and give them some quality time with themselves. And the statistics here again are showing that too is really more and more of a trend. So you're having those travelers saying, travel for one, please. And then your younger category, which are basically kids that are, you know, in grad school up until they really get married and have their first child, a lot of them just love to travel. And if you get on the internet, you see there's so many backpackers now with blogs, and they want to see the world. And it's not just backpackers. It's, you know, young professionals, they feel like, well, I want to travel now because once I'm settled down, then, you know, I won't have the money or the ability, the time, et cetera, to do it. So here again, you know, there are more people, whatever age group, that are traveling solo. So I think that myth is really not true anymore.
All right, let's get to the next myth. Somebody has to be fearless to travel solo.
Well, first of all, fear of the unknown, especially when you're traveling solo, can be a paralyzing idea for somebody who's never done it. And I kind of liken it to stage fright. If the first time you get up and do something in front of an audience and you're so nervous you can't think or whatever, you're about paralyzed. Typically you make it through, but you're just so happy to get off the stage. Well, I think a lot of people kind of feel like they're too scared to do it, basically. And I must say, I don't know anybody who is fearless. I know people who, you know, have a lot of guts or courage, but if somebody is fearless, they're just kind of cuckoo. Because it's normal to be fearful. You know, there are a lot of things that can make somebody fearful. But like any fear, if you want to overcome it, you have to kind of approach it from a logical viewpoint as well as courageously. So I'll kind of get into answering this question with going into my fear of flying, because I think it's a good example. I mean, when I was a young girl, from the first trip I took in an airplane to Miami Beach, I was so scared. I could not trust that this big piece of metal could get up in the air.
It's not supposed to be in the sky. It's supposed to be on the ground.
It was awful. I mean, I was so tense. And it was just, I hated to fly, really. And I hated to fly for years and years, even with my husband. But I decided that I had to get over this because I never let it stop me from traveling. But I was so fearful that it was abnormal, okay? So I decided to read some books that were written by pilots on how to overcome your fear of flying. I've watched YouTubes. I even watched Flight Tracker and watch flights. I still do this, and I kind of enjoy it. I love watching planes take off and land. I have a certain thing that I do now. I always try to get the seat in the very front of the plane by the window, you know, near the exit. And I even always say my prayers before we take off and when we land. I know that sounds a little, you know, but that's how I cope with it. And I must say that I'm not really that afraid of it anymore. And the new planes, the new planes are great. So the point is, if you want to travel solo and you're fearful of it, you have to do things to help you get through that fear. And you can, because, I mean, I know personally myself, I have typically done enough research where I'm going, and I know the do's and don'ts. I am a very curious person, and I love to explore, and I love different cultures. So for me to touch down in Marrakesh, I just think this is just so exciting. This is what life's all about, is, you know, another adventure. And whatever is keeping you from doing solo travel, you have to really kind of look it straight in the eye and decide how you're going to work through it. Okay, just a few little broad things that kind of, they're not really tips, but some of the things that might help you get through this. And the first deals with more of a rational or kind of a logical approach. I have to say the first trip solo really is always the most difficult because you know, you're going to be going through some type of culture shock. You will totally be by yourself. It's a new experience. So it's the hardest one. Okay, so you really want to try to be prepared and do a lot of research. And that was my next suggestion, is do a lot of pre-trip research. Know everything that you want to see, make lists of it, you know, even where you want to eat, read about the culture, learn, you know, read something or understand something about the food. I love YouTube videos, so I look at a lot of videos about top 10 things to do, say in Singapore, or best restaurants in Beijing, and or shopping, say in Paris. By watching these videos, you not only get information about the specific thing that you are the topic, but that you'll see people in the videos. You see how they dress. You'll see some of the sites and where they're located. So all of that helps you to visualize and get yourself ready to be somewhere, you know, alone. And you still have, or you've created some familiarity before you go. And that really does, I think, help. Also, stay in highly rated hotels. You know, your first trips, I wouldn't skimp on the hotel, because the hotels have good security systems in place. They have great concierges, or, you know, the concierge services are all part of them being highly rated. And just that in itself will help you a lot. So I suggest doing that, and definitely consult that concierge. When you get there, you know, you have your list, what you want to do. You know, sit down with a concierge and go through it and say, you know, is this close to here, or how should I do this? What should I do on this day? And, you know, if I need transportation in the evening, say I want to go to some kind of entertainment or performance, you know, get them to arrange it for you, etc. So, you know, it takes away any element that would make you afraid or would make you like absolutely. And, you know, in the past, I've hired private guides and drivers if I needed them. And typically, unless you're in Paris, now I can tell you, private guides in Paris are expensive, but in the Far East, they're very, very affordable. And of course, you know, just practice your safety habits. You know, do everything that you would do at home, and maybe even a little bit more when you first start to travel. Use your common sense. So that's just kind of the first, what I call, logical, common sense way to overcome the fears. Then, you know, on the emotional side, I mean, you have to sum up your courage, and you have to just decide you're going to trust that everything will work out, and just have faith that it's going to be good, and that if anything happens, whatever you need will end up surfacing. And I must share with you, in all my years of travel, I mean, I've had some what I call mini disasters, but, you know, they really do work themselves out. Maybe not exactly how you planned, but if you let go of what is aggravating you because, say, what you wanted to do or et cetera didn't work out, usually there's something maybe even better. And really, the more that you do travel solo, it really gets easier, and you're hardly apprehensive at all, especially if you prepare before. And the preparation is really good, whether it's packing the right clothes, doing the pre-trip research, like I said, for knowing what you want to do, knowing something about the culture, and really kind of imagining everything before you go. That helps a whole lot. And I really do, I know for myself, I've done it so much, and like I shared a while ago, I get so much pleasure walking down the streets, looking at things, and exploring even the serendipitous moments, like, you know, like when I'm trying to find a restaurant and I get there and it's closed. Mm. And then I have to keep looking, and I get on my apps and try to figure out another good restaurant that I want to go to that's close. And I get to that one, it's closed too. And then all of a sudden, I mean, I'm at the end of my rope, starving to death, and I find a fabulous place to eat that is maybe the best place that I've eaten the entire trip. I can guarantee you things like this happen when you travel solo. And the more you do it, I don't feel that I'm not scared, put it that way. Here again, like anybody, if there's something to fear, we're going to be fearful. You know, normal people are going to be fearful. So you just try to remove anything that would put you in a position that would create those feelings.
You've talked before just about how the solo travel builds up your resourcefulness. It's like a skill that you can develop, and you just get more practiced at being resourceful in situations where you might have a little difficulty.
Oh, yeah. It's like anything. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you learn how to play bridge well, you know, the card game bridge, it takes a long time to know the conventions, to know the strategies, to be able to be successful at it. And, you know, to travel solo, it's not as complicated as bridge or as challenging. But, you know, you do have to do things that you're responsible for everything, basically. Yeah. The buck stops with you. And if you let things slide, then, you know, more and more you'll get stressed out, to tell you the truth. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, of course you did.
Okay. One thing I do want to say, too. I just talked about going pure solo, but always remember, you know, if you, like your first trip, I always suggest going somewhere close at home that, you know, you haven't been to. And just go for a couple of days and stick your toe in the solo travel pool. And you can take a tour. Or, you know, go on, say, a cruise or whatever, that there are other people you'll meet that are solo, and you've got everything basically taken care of. This is also a very good first-time way to start traveling solo. And I think that that's very logical for people who've never done it before.
You're making it a little easier on yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Like the training wheels of solo travel.
Yeah, you don't, you know, you're not totally by yourself. All the logistics are taken care of. You know, you already have your itinerary programmed for the day. You know where you're going to be eating. You're not going to be eating totally by yourself. You know, there are all the things that make people either uncomfortable or think it solo travel is awful or would make them scared. This, you know, these types of solo trips, I think, are a good way for people to start if they just would not go anywhere by themselves totally.
Ooh, okay, good myth. Everything costs more when you travel solo.
Whew, well, let me tell you, solo travel can be more expensive than if you're traveling with a companion. And I say this, it depends on the route you take. First of all, if you go with a tour, and a lot of the cruises, especially on the upper end, they charge what's called a single supplement. And say if your tour costs $2,000, they price it at $2,000 for double occupancy. Each person pays $2,000. But if you're going solo, you have what's called the single supplement. And that can be anywhere from 30%, 50% to 60% more.
Whoa.
So say if you're going and the trip is $2,000, single supplement is 50%, you pay $3,000 to go on the tour just because you're solo. And that, unfortunately, is industry standard, but I must say it is changing now. So you need to look for those opportunities where it's either reduced or it's waived, etc. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in just a minute. But it also can be a lot cheaper. I will cite an example. Last year, I went around the world And I went solo, purely solo, for 50 days. I went to 7 different cities and a different culture in each stop. It was a fabulous trip. I set my target budget for the total trip's cost at $32,000. I came in at $32,400, just a little bit over. National Geographic, they have a wonderful 25-day round the world. Most of the round the world tours are usually around 25 days, a little over 3 weeks, because, you know, a lot of people, after 3 weeks, they get really tired and they want to go home. But their trip for doubles, I think, is something like, they range like around 56, 60, 63,000. If you are solo, it goes up to 86,000 to 90 for 25 days for, you know, basically 7 different it's astronomical. So, solo travel with tours can be really expensive. And that's one of the, I guess, themes of my whole approach to solo travel, especially my focus is affordable luxury. You can travel, and if you're smart and you use all the tools out there and you do a lot of research and you put pen to the paper, etc., you can make fabulous trips happen at much less cost. Because unfortunately, in these tours, etc., they've got a lot of people who are, I guess you'd say, middlemen in the process, and they have to charge more, and they have insurance and all that. So all of that, you know, really does add up. Also, besides you doing it yourself and saving money and still going what I consider not totally VIP first class, but definitely, I mean, I typically stay in 5-star hotels, fly business class when I'm overseas, I hire private guides and drivers, and I tell you, it's not as expensive as if I would go on a tour. It's amazing, but if you really get used to doing this, you will see that you can bring in your trip at $500 a day versus, you know, $1,000 a day or more plus, with the tours. Now, the cruises can be well-priced, you know, because you're not going to different hotels. There's a lot of things that they're able to take out, but the cruises, you have to watch out. There are a lot of things that they charge you for on the cruise, and etc. You have to make sure about the alcohol, if you enjoy, you know, wine or whatever. There are a lot of things that, you know, they know there are things that you're going to want to do, or they'll put out there to entice you, which, you know, you'll end up spending probably 20% more at least if you even do a cruise that it comes in at a good number per day.
That's kind of the reputation sometimes of cruises, is the nickeling and diming kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, they try to get it to where it makes sense for everybody. But once they got you there, oh, my gosh. You know, going back to how to prevent the added cost and how, you know, solo travel can be less expensive than on a tour or on a cruise. Besides the research, if you do want to take a cruise or a tour, look for those that do not have the single supplements. And a lot of the companies now are reducing their single supplements, or on certain cruises or certain tours, they will completely waive it. So look for that. That's very important. As well as there's some companies now that have only solo cruises or only trips for solos, and then it's not there, and it's much more affordable. Another tip is go during the low or the shoulder season. So if you want to go solo, this is a very good time to go, because everything, especially in the low season, is cheaper. The airfare, the hotels, even your shopping will be cheaper because there are hardly any tourists there. Now, it's probably because it's cold, but if that doesn't bother you, it's a great time to go, and it's much more affordable. And last, I touched on this a little bit, budgeting. I am a big budgeter. I set a total amount that I'm willing to spend for a trip before I even design it, before I even, you know, think about really, will I go there? I'll say, okay, I have $5,000 I want to spend. Now, where can I make this $5,000 really pop? What place can I go that I will really feel like it was worth spending the money and enjoy myself? So I'll figure that, and then I'll start with the hotels and the airfare. And once I get those basic hard costs, I subtract that from the total amount, and then I know how much I have to spend on food and shopping and tickets, etc. And I ballpark that per day, how much I can spend. So I keep a daily account. Was I over $500, you know, $500 today, or was I only $100? And so, you know, I think like that. So bottom line is, if you approach it and think about the money and do it with some of these little tips, it really can be a lot cheaper. I mean, a whole lot cheaper. Oh, I want to say one other thing.
Sure.
And then also, if you are traveling, say, with friends or, you know, a companion, I mean, first of all, if you're traveling solo, you make all the decisions. You decide where you want to eat, where you want to go, etc. So you can control how much money you're spending per day, especially if you blew it the day before, and then the next day you can just eat sandwiches or whatever. But if you're with friends, you have to compromise. You have to go where they want to go a lot. You know, you might go to a theater performance that you don't want to go to, and you have to spend $50 for the ticket that night. Or you're eating here or there, and you're spending money on, you know, food and places that you don't want to do. So, you know, that can pile up. Now, on the flip side, you might share a room together. And you might, you definitely probably will share some of the cab or transportation cost, and maybe even some of the meal. And that can save you some money. But it doesn't really save you that much, I can tell you, unless you're sharing a room. If you're sharing a room, that might help you a little bit. But I know when I'm traveling with my husband, yeah, I'm not going to save any money. I mean, even if I try to budget us, he is the type of person, he doesn't really want to plan. He just wants to indulge, whether it's drinking, eating, shopping, activities. So I can tell you, I save so much money when I don't travel with him.
Today I learned he's a budget buster.
let me tell you. And it's so amazing. And I know most women who travel with their husbands will probably agree with me. You know, you want them to have a good time. You can pretty much have a good time. But it's them that you're always concerned whether, you know. So a lot of times, to make them have a good time, you'll spend money you wouldn't normally want to spend, you know, because, I don't know, I guess maybe, you know, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. So I personally think if you budget your money and you start understanding how much things cost when you travel solo, and really do your research and use all the great tools out there, you can make your trips happen more affordably than going on tours, as well as with a group or your husband's significant other.
All right, let's get into this next myth. Solo travel is more difficult than other travel.
Well, I have to answer this one yes and no. Yes, because first of all, you're totally responsible for everything, you know, and that it does make it more difficult. I mean, you have to make sure you've got your passport, make sure you've got this, that, and the other, blah, 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 you know, and all of those little steps, one little thing you forget can, ooh, and then you don't have anybody like your husband right there to work it through, or, you know, or help you work through it. So yes, that number one, you know, you are there and you only have yourself to figure out how to solve a problem. Now, of course, you've got your service providers. They will, you know, they'll be happy to take care of what you need, especially if you're you know, you have the money to be able to pay for it. But your husband's not there to go get you a cup of coffee in the morning or to lug your suitcases upstairs in a train station. I mean, you really are by yourself. And say you lose your passport. Well, you know, you got to work through it. But to have somebody there when you work through it is, you know, it just makes it not quite as like, oh my God, now what? So, and then, you know, at night you don't have anybody to talk to. So, I mean, you know, granted, you are by yourself. And, you know, those kinds of things can make that kind of travel experience more difficult for you, seriously. So, but I always think that, and I must say, when I travel, I do leave knowing that I have a reserve or a cash reserve that I can get to in the event something happens. I mean, of course, I get travel insurance, etc., but I always know that if something happened, I mean, I even go to the point, if I'm going somewhere real exotic like China, I had my banker at J.P. Morgan. I said, okay, now I want the addresses of the J.P. Morgans in Beijing, Shanghai, et cetera, because you never know what would happen in the, you know, and then you couldn't get some more money than you had, basically. But what I'm saying is, you know, if you have that cash reserve and the financial wherewithal, you can solve pretty much any problem. And so it doesn't make it difficult. You know, you can get your private guides, your drivers, you can have people pick you up from the airport, lug your luggage wherever you want. The concierges are great, and one of my big suggestions is when you first get to your hotel and you unpack and you relax, you might go and have a glass of wine, go and sit down with the concierge, go over what you're interested in doing, make friends with the concierge, get him to do something for you, whether it's getting you some tour tickets or whatever. And the first time that you get him to do something, give him a big tip. If you tip the concierge well, I can tell you that is one of the smartest things a solo female can do. I cite an example in Beijing. I tipped the concierge very nicely the first day. He had gotten me this great private driver and guide. And I love this Fullerton Hotel, and I just, you know, so I gave him a really nice tip. Well, by the third day, I had the manager of the hotel joining me for breakfast, suggesting this. I mean, I just felt like I've never gotten this kind of treatment anywhere that I've ever been. So the point is a nice tip to the concierge will go a long way. And, you know, I think concierges a lot of times do a lot of work and they don't get tips. So I guess that's one of my, you know, you have to give to get, really, I believe. So, and then, of course, one other thing is enroll in the STEP program. If you are a U.S. citizen, I've talked about this on several other podcasts, But this is the Smart Travelers Enrollment Program. It's with the U.S. State Department. And basically what you do is you log in all your information in terms of who you are, your address, blah, 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 passport number, as well as your itinerary and where you'll be staying. So in the event you have an accident or you lose your passport or whatever, you have a number to call. They tell you exactly what to do. If there's some kind of unrest or, you know, a political issue that could be put you in danger, they get in touch with you. They tell you what to do. So this is a very good thing to have, and to have, you know, basically if you're an American citizen, logged in to our government resources while you're away. So that, I think, also makes it, you know, less scary and less difficult.
Final myth, Astrid, and this is really, come on, this is a low, this is a an underhanded lob for you. This is an easy pitch. Solo travel is solitary and lonely.
Well, I think that this is the biggest myth, or basically the elephant in the room. Because, I mean, this is... And especially, I think really a lot of the baby boomers and maybe some of the women who have never really had a professional career or done too much on their own. They've married, have children. They, you know, they're very connected to their family. Oh, this, you know, that this is very difficult for them to visualize them doing this. And I think some of it is kind of rooted, I read some stuff and I want to share two quotes that I read, but I think it's kind of inherent in maybe some of the movie or literary culture that, you know, we've all either kind of been affected by. One of the quotes is that I read, and I thought this was is right on spot for this particular myth, is solo travel is the refuge of a depressed, solitary person facing a tragedy in life. Now, that sounds really bad, doesn't
That's
it?
That's bad. That's bad.
That's bad. Or, here's another one. Most people think that solo travelers have no friends or there is no love in their family, and that's why they couldn't find a companion to travel with. Now, that's another bad one, but I think that, you know, in some people's minds, that this is still what they think. These situations or causes really could very well be at the root of why some people don't venture out and take a solo journey. I can understand that, you know, quite well. But whatever the genesis of each one's lack of not wanting to travel solo or fear or believe that this is lonely or, you know, this is for somebody who's just nobody likes or whatever, really, whether your solo trip is good or not depends totally on your attitude. And I mean that, whether you allow yourself to be lonely or you are in a completely different frame of mind where you're not lonely. And I must say, it does take a little bit of practice, but I'm not, you know, I'm a little bit unusual. I don't get lonely very much, but, you know, there are times when that can happen. But bottom line, it is your attitude that is the basis of whether you're going to be lonely or not. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself without hopefully boring you, but my genesis of solo travel really kind of started with, I guess, self-discovery and personal development. I had a mother who was born in Berlin. My grandparents were from Berlin. And I grew up as a young child in this environment where I had all of these, you know, German kinds of, I mean, they spoke German and my grandmother was just a character and everything. So that started my desire to really understand Germanness. I mean, I saw it from my mother and my grandparents, but all my people, all my friends and other relatives in Louisiana were completely different. So it you know, I always had kind of a like, well, I've got to go to Germany. I want to meet my relatives there, and I just want to know here again too, what made me a little bit different than other people. And I knew it was rooted in, you know, my mother and my family from Germany. So my solo travels, you know, took me, because a lot of people didn't want to go here and there dealing with my family for, you know, kind of my own personal evolution. So that kind of was at the root of my travels. You know, I went to school, I did all kinds of things, either with people or solo travel. Then, you know, also in my particular case, as a young child, and some of it I think was because of this influence, but some of it I think is innate, because my sister is not like this at all. She likes to travel, but it's not like, oh, she just wants to get real deep in it. You know, she'll do a trip or two a year, and that's all fun and good, and she enjoys it. But it's a little, I approach it a little bit different. But I can always remember as a young girl, I either wanted to be a diplomat or, you know, international business tycoon or something. I just always wanted to be international. you know, I loved doing research papers. I'll never forget my first paper in elementary school was on Lapland, and nobody wanted Lapland. And I said, well, I'll take Lapland, you know. I mean, it was okay with me. I thought, God, I never heard of Lapland. Yeah. Where is this, in Africa? I mean, you know, I didn't know. But I was like that since I was a young child. So my desire to know myself better, as well as see the world, have adventure. I mean, I really, it's very hard for me to be lonely, because I'm still so curious about cultures, etc. I mean, this is how far I went with the self-discovery in my German roots. I ended up going back to LSU and getting a master's degree in international relations, and I focused on Eastern Europe, specifically East Germany, and oh my gosh, I really got into just the social systems, political, economic. I mean, I could have gone on and on at the time when I studied, but what I'm saying is that, you know, I'm just naturally drawn to cultures, and they're fascinating to me, how, you know, why people do this and they don't do it here, and everything. I just love it. So I can really say I'm never bored when I'm traveling solo. But I can understand, you know, where other people who don't have my personality type or whatever, that this is a big one. I mean, number one, you do have to eat alone. And eating alone is one of the big, oh God, that makes so many people uncomfortable, and really to the point where they just think, I'm not going to do that. You know, I don't want to go on a trip and eat every meal in my hotel room. So, but yes, I do eat alone. I know that the buck stops with me. There's nobody else. I don't have anybody to talk to at night. And I do miss my family and friends. But here again, you just have to have the attitude that you're not going to feel lonely. And I tell you, by just saying, I'm not going to feel lonely, even though, you know, you kind of, it drifts in and out, but you just don't allow yourself to get to that point. And some of the things that I do, some of it might not appeal to you, but I kind of do it as a discipline thing, and it does help me from feeling like I am all by myself, and what am I doing, and, you know, it would be so much better if I had somebody with me, etc. And I must say, there are certain trips that I do love traveling with my family, or I do love going with others. I mean, don't think that I don't travel with others at all. I do, but then the solo travel part is something that I think is extra special if you're ready to do it, and you know, you approach it right. So these are a couple of my tips. First of all, and I want to say this personally, is I do say my prayers at night. Every night when I'm gone, I just thank the Lord that I am safe, that I had a great day. If anything went wrong, that, you know, everything worked out okay. Or if it did go wrong, I'll never forget, I had a very bad fall here again in Beijing. I twisted my ankle so bad, I thought that I had completely torn all the ligaments. Well, I hopped to the bed, and for some reason, I had brought my ankle sock, and I do twist my ankle, unfortunately. I have small ankles, and easily. And so I just said, okay, you know, dear Lord, if I have to have some kind of medical attention or even cut this 5-week trip in China short, I'll just accept it. But I'm not going to worry about it tonight. I'm going to hop over, get my little ankle sock, put it on, and just give it to you. I mean, the next day, and I could not put pressure on this ankle after I did it, on this foot. The next day, I got up. I was able to put pressure on it. I, you know, put the ankle sock on and got my trainers on, and I was fine. I could feel it, but within 3 days, it did not hurt anymore. It was just something else. So, I mean, I don't want to get too far out, but I do as a discipline, and I do this at home too. I mean, I do say my prayers every night. I'm thankful for all of my blessings. So that's number one. Number two, I do plan all my daily activities. I have a to-do list. A lot of people say, oh, well, I want to do this or that, and they're kind of loose about it. I'm not that loose. I start out with a plan, and then if I get distracted or something is really fun, then I get loose. But I'm focused. So I know really what I'm going to do. This is a big one. Don't let yourself get overly tired. When you get overly tired or you get exhausted, that's when the loneliness creeps in. I mean, I'm telling you, that's when you kind of, some of the things maybe that in your life that really hurt you or whatever, they'll start resurfacing. So let me tell you, go to bed early or get your rest and don't let yourself get overly tired. The next thing is, and this is one of the greatest things about doing things on your own or say, you know, we're talking about solo travel, but live in the moment. Don't think about what happened yesterday or what might happen tomorrow. You know, just live in what you're doing in the moment. Just stay in that moment. That is one, to me, that's one of the most wonderful life lessons that I've learned, because I can tend to worry about maybe the future sometimes, but oh, no, I never allow myself to do that anymore. And that is so liberating. So when you're traveling solo, this gives you time to really practice it, because you could worry, oh, what happens if I miss this, whatever, and I don't get there, or what happened? You know, you can what if yourself to death. So don't do that. You know, you decide you're going to go see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I mean, you look at the scenery all the way there. When you get there, you go and you take your photographs. If you're with a guide, you ask questions. You do not think about tomorrow, oh my God, I saw on television there were terrorist attacks. Don't even think like that. Just stay in the moment. And let me tell you, that is a great, as I said, life skill. And that's one of the ways to not be lonely when you're solo. Also, you know, we all have social media now, or most all of us. So technology-wise, whether it's through email, Facebook, you know, your cell phone, I mean, you're connected. You're not totally alone like you were, you know, say 10, 15 years ago. And I guess I'd say last, you know, just, and I'm kind of like this normally. I mean, I like to live every day to the fullest. And, you know, the expression carpe diem, I think that's how
carpe diem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is, you got to get that attitude. Like, you live this day like this is going to be your last day. And I tell you, you won't be lonely. If you have those feelings and that attitude, it's very hard to get lonely, because you'd be surprised. You'll end up talking to somebody. You'll meet this person. You'll see the most beautiful person in the world that you want. You'll end up getting that purse for 50% of what they were selling it for, and it was very affordable for you. Lots of different things happen when you have this kind of inner attitude and perspective. So, you know, kind of as we go to the end of this particular podcast, you know, I really do think that my personal evolution and growth from my solo travels have given me tremendous confidence. I mean, I've always had guts, but this has helped me really know that, you know, I can figure what out, what I need out. And that's really important, because a lot of times you want it, or people think, oh my God, what happens, or if it's not perfect or whatever. This really builds your innate confidence, and that trickles down to every other aspect of your life. I can tell you, you feel more confident, whether it's if you're dealing with somebody who has a totally different attitude than you do, or belief system. I can tell you, you can let it go and still, you know, be okay with it. So. And you get this by traveling and traveling solo more than, I think, doing it with others, okay? Then also I can really say that, you know, I've always had a very independent personality, almost to a fault. But when you travel solo, you also have to depend on others. You have to have faith that they're going to pick you up at the airport when they said it's going to happen. And I can tell you, I've had 99.9% of the time do it. I've only had one time where it didn't work, you know, but I figured it out at the airport, and, you know, I got another limousine service to take me. But the bottom line is even if you're independent, you have to depend on others, and it teaches you, or I guess it just reconfirms that faith in mankind and each other, it'll work out. You know, it's kind of interesting how this forces you to do it. You know, I don't know how exactly totally to explain it. I mean, I guess when you're at home, you know how to get it done and do it by yourself. But a lot of times when you're traveling solo, you know what you need, but you can't, it's not as easy for you to do it like you did at home. So it teaches you that. And that here again, I think, is another very good life lesson. It's going to work out most of the time. Maybe not all the time, but usually if it doesn't work out, it's probably in the end better. And that's kind of hard to accept, but that's just some of my opinion and some of my experience. Then I've talked about being happy alone. Now, this is, to me, one of the greatest byproducts. If you can be happy with your own company, and if you can be happy alone, that's the foundation of a happy person. Because then, you know, you can begin to really have what I consider very mature relationships, whether it's friendships or a marriage or within your family. It's less of a dependence that is based on neediness, you know. And so being alone traveling really does help you deal with some of the things that make you dependent when you don't need to be dependent. So this is very, very, it gives you a lot of growth in this area. And I have personally experienced that to the point where, I mean, I just love to sit outside in cafes and watch people. I mean, you know, a lot of people who, a lot of my friends, they say, how can you just do that? After a while, don't you feel like an idiot? And I said, no. I mean, I just love it. I don't know. It's something that's so liberating to me, and I just feel very happy. I can't describe it as well as I'm happy when I'm with them. You know, it's a completely different state of happiness, but I think it's something that is pretty pretty powerful. Then also, I guess I just. You know, I guess this is some of what I'm saying or just said, is I really treasure the time that I have for self-reflection. You don't have that kind of time unless you are alone, you know, and when you're traveling alone, it's amazing how you do think about things like, why did I do that when I was 15? Or that was so stupid. And you kind of get to the bottom of some of the things. As well as I have found that many times if I'm having some kind of problem I can't really figure out how to solve or something's bothering me, if I go on the other side of the world and I have enough alone time, all of a sudden I figure out exactly what the root of the problem is, how I'm going to solve it, and I'm ready to go with it, you know. And if you're in your own environment and you're at home or in your daily, it just is harder to get away from it to really get deep. And when you're traveling solo, this happens. So I don't consider it being lonely. It gives you some time to really, like I said before, some me time. Then, of course, the more you do it, you will become more comfortable in interacting with others in terms of getting to know other people. I mean, of course, you've got to interact with your service personnel and the tour guides and all of that. But I'm talking about making new friends and you know, lasting kinds of relationships. And I can tell you, this is a great byproduct of solo travel. And I've met some very interesting people by doing this that I have... real nice and solid friendships with. And you can't do that a lot of times when you're in a group or you're with your husband or your family. Those opportunities do not surface. So that's another thing. And you're not lonely. I mean, it's funny how, you know, certain things that you think are going to make you just, oh, this is going to be so depressing. But things happen and fill those voids, and you're not, you know. Now, if you have the attitude like, oh my God, I am going to this, that, and be real negative, well, it's less likely to happen to you. So, and the last thing I guess I'd say is my senses, when you travel solo, your senses for some reason are just heightened. And I don't know if it's because you're not talking as much or you're alone, but you're just more aware. And what I think, you know, as a young person and even in my 30s and 40s, I never was turned on by sunsets and nature. I mean, I thought they were nice, but I just didn't really, I couldn't get the beauty that so many of the people that I knew, like my husband's an architect, and he sees, well, of course, he sees differently from me. I'm not that way at all. Oh, and he would go on and on. Well, I must say, now that I've traveled solo a lot, I appreciate nature so much more. I see beautiful flowers more readily. I hear the birds sing more. I do appreciate sunsets in a much more real way than I ever have. And solo travel has done that, because you're just more, your senses are heightened when you're traveling solo. So to wrap it up, my solo travel experience has been liberating, enriching, empowering, fun and sometimes blissful. It has definitely helped me increase what I call my self-development or self-realization. It's improved the quality of my life at home and in relationships. I'm definitely more thankful for my blessings, and it's really helped me be a much more compassionate and patient person. When you travel by yourself to different cultures, different places in the world, and you see people, different socioeconomic levels and how they live their lives and what they value and what's beautiful to them and everything. Just being exposed to that, it really, you do evolve as a human being, and it's all good. I really believe it's all good. So I'll end with kind of a little bit of a long philosophical statement. Okay, here it goes. While some of the solo travel myths might still hold some truths, if you face and work through these negative biases or attitudes and set your consciousness to a new mindset that solo travel is wonderful and venture out on this type of travel, these myths will be gradually debunked for you. And you will find yourself thinking, travel for one, please.
One final fact. We weren't able to debunk this one. When you travel, you gotta pack. A packing list might help. You can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. And on this show post on the website, astridtravel.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and really find it any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We're asking for a special favor. If you like what you're hearing, we invite you to give us a rating on any of those platforms. It really will help the show. It'll help introduce Solo Travel Talk to lots of other listeners. We thank you so much for listening. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or solo travel advisors, visit our website, astridtravel.com.